Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we're doing something just a little bit different. We have a feed drop from our friends over at the Panic Table. They are currently crowdfunding a very cool project called Void Stream. It is a tool set of terrifying found footage, audio, and video artifacts for Mothership and all your other favorite horror TTRPGs. These are distress signals, CCTV footage, farewell transmissions, and awful audio logs designed for use as in-world set dressing, creepy creative prompts, in-game adventure hooks, and or just full-on horror immersion.
But that is not all. Included with every backing of Voidstream is SOS Source of Signal, a completely original Mothership adventure by our friends Dungeon Club and the Panic Table, now available in delicious print. Deep in the bowels of a derelict public access station, you and your crew will plumb the static and inky depths to discover the hideous source of the Voidstream signal and learn fun ways to use the Voidstream audio and video artifacts along the way.
It is also going to include 30 minutes of original atmospheric music.
Ha!
It works better. Works better when it's written out. It's got fear in there. But by our friend and yours, Behold, which we're very excited about.
On cassette, allegedly.
On cassette.
And fun fact, there's another pretty cool person working on this project. Me. I have been unlocked as the $20,000 stretch goal, and they'll be delving into my twisted little brain to construct 6 unique void streams of my own.
Hell yes. Voidstream is on BackerKit right now, but the campaign ends tomorrow, Friday, August 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So go back it right now, but if you're too late, pre-sales of Voidstream, SOS, and the unbelievably cool VHS box set will be available even after the campaign ends. Let us take you now live to a pre-recorded interview with Cameron from the Panic Table and the entire Many-Sided Media crew.
We talk about horror in game design, horror in actual play, and how to bring, you know, horror juicy goodness to your table at home. Enjoy all the fun tips and, you know, a little bit of Cameron, my nemesis, razzing me.
Also, P.S., if you want to see a video version of this interview, it is available on the Panic Table YouTube channel. We'll put the link in our show notes below.
Enjoy. Atmospheric, get it? Get it?
Atmosphere.
It's atmospheric.
F-E-A-R.
Atmospheric.
It's funny because we're
no,
spelling
Brian,
it wrong.
No, Brian, I don't think you're getting it. It's atmospheric.
It's like a homophone joke.
It's a homophone joke.
Yeah.
Hello, the internet. I am Cameron Danger Stripmatter, and this is another luxurious episode of Streaming Into the Void. Today we are joined by the entire Motley Rogues gallery of Many-Sided Media. Abby Hepworth, Chinook Tissera, Brian Flaherty, and it says here their intern Elliot Davis. Welcome to Streaming Into the Void, my friend.
That's it for me. I'm going to head out.
Yeah. Technically, you've given him a promotion from what his title is.
Yeah. I was errand boy before this interview.
Yes. Cool boy.
It was actually errand lad.
Errand lad. Behind his back.
I've got a great little coat.
To me, this is the most New York get-together. We all live probably within maybe 2.5 miles of each other, and we're all like firmly sequestered into our own nooks and cranny and several different boroughs, I imagine. I don't even know. This is just such a New York... This could have been in person, and we absolutely didn't want it to be, and I cherish that about us. Yeah, welcome to New York. We're doing things out here. You are doing things out here. Many-Sided Media is up to so much, and it's the four of you, right? I've only met three of you in a bar, and Abby, this is our first time face to face.
I know.
To your dulcet tones, and they are dulcet. Just warble us a tune.
I can't sing to save my life, but I do like crawling into everyone's ears.
Are you not in any of the tree shanties?
No, although Jay tried extremely hard to convince everyone that they can teach anyone to be a singer. And that truly anyone can sing and sing well. And I was like, I don't know about that.
Abby didn't want to shatter Jay's worldview.
Again, as somebody who went into that not wanting to, I believe them.
It is a treat to have you here in our digital little hallway closet together, just mooshed together, our breaths warming each other's necks. I hate this metaphor, even as we're saying it out loud, but many-sided media is such a multifaceted thing. In fact, your needle is so down on the groove of what the talk of the table is. You've got your own show about it, where you get into the nitty-gritty of what's going on in tabletop RPGs, nationwide, worldwide. What's the distinction? Worldwide. What's the criteria? And how do you get on a show like that? I'm asking for a friend.
Well, you have to be selected, and like, we do leave that to the intern. And he doesn't care for you.
our intern actually makes all of our business decisions.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. I own the bank account. I've got the masthead right behind me. It's worldwide at this point. We have made an effort to talk to all different kinds of folks. We essentially just want to talk to people who we want to be our friends, is how Talk of the Table works. We're like, cool, interesting person who's doing cool, interesting thing, be our friend and talk to us. We've made an effort to make it not just like your typical fare of guests, where like I feel like people will go for like high profile designers and high profile performers. We like to talk to more indie folks that we've gotten to work with, and yeah.
It's crazy how much you're up to. Not only are you doing that, you're knee deep in another season of, I would say tree deep in another season of My First Dungeon, where the four of you and sometimes colorful guests, if I have that right, it's you're all over the place. It's not just the core group. You bring in new folks every once in a while. And together, I mean, why am I pitching it? Brian, tell us what the heck My First Dungeon is.
My First Dungeon is a tabletop role-playing podcast that helps game masters learn new games and make each one better than the last.
This has got to be such a shock for your core listeners, because this is probably like the first or second time they've actually looked at you while your mouths are moving. Is this
100%. It's weird. We actually talked about a while ago potentially recording and using video for some of our content, and ultimately it was simply that we don't have the bandwidth to edit video on top of editing audio and doing all those other sorts of things. But also I was personally very grateful, where I was like, oh, I don't have to think about this. My mug doesn't have to get dolled up every time.
It's scary to find yourselves talking to yourselves, and as we talk amongst ourselves, I figured tonight we talk about something scary. Do you see what I did there? That was fun.
I love it.
Great. It's not scripted. I'm just a lonely person. One of my favorite things about your offerings that I rapidly absorbed after I ran into Elliot at a bar and then wound up talking to Brian for the rest of that time is how many of the games that you've played, whether it was intentional, either the game system itself was designed to be unnerving, or just because horror can be any genre, any situation, with just a light nudge, you've played a lot of games publicly that take a trip to Spooky Town. I would love for you to talk a little bit just about frightening gameplay, both publicly and at your own tables.
You know, it's kind of funny that when you invited us on to talk about horror games, Abby and I were talking, we're like, you know, this is like kind of surprising, we don't really run that many horror games. But then we thought about it, we're like, what, I guess we did 10 Candles, which is obviously horror, and then like Wild Sea has some like horror elements. Die, Project Echo is pretty explicitly like has some horror stuff, and we started taking it down. It's like, oh, actually most of what we do is as horror.
We even brought horror into Hometown Holiday, a game that
was scary.
If they had thought they needed to put no body horror in that game, they didn't think of it, but they should have. Because we brought it.
That is a game that is explicitly trying to recreate a Hallmark Christmas movie in which the ending is supposed to be getting one chaste kiss. Mm-hmm. And somehow we had like pretty explicit body horror in it.
Yeah. It was awful. Who did that?
Truly, the question is, what of your productions hasn't been at least lightly horrifying? Chinook, can you even think of one?
Honey Heist?
Honey Heist was pretty neutral.
Honey Heist is pretty neutral.
I think the only one is Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast.
But Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast.
Yazeba's has some eerie chapters.
Yeah.
There were some horror chapters in there.
Wander Home was pretty not horror.
Wander Home was just nice and fun delightful the whole time. Yeah.
But that's just like the how Possum Creek games kind of work.
Yeah, I mean, how did we get here? How did we arrive at this bizarre internet publication now? And this is where you find that Many-Sided Media is being outed as a primarily horror podcast.
Don't tell anyone. You actually can't release this.
I think it's one of those things where, like, every, with some exception, I know there's always an exception to the rule, but I just feel like every TTRPG lends itself super well to horror. And I think that there's also an element that I was thinking about this earlier today of, like, when I was at summer camp, the best thing in the world was everybody exchanging scary stories, and you're all trying to one-up each other, and you're all trying to freak each other out, and you're all trying to, like, retell some kind of local horror but in a new way that's gonna mess with everybody. And I feel like part of at least the way we play, I guess, TTRPGs, it's that same thing of, like, I want to one up everybody and freak everybody out, and all of us are constantly trying to, like, you know, do a spook in a fun, cool new way. And so I feel like it ends up twisting into that, like, how do I freak everybody out but in a fun way?
This is a perfect segue into my first beefy question for you guys, which is, why is it fun to be scared together? And Abby, we've gotten your version of that story already. Like, why is it fun to be scared together? Is it fun to be scared together? What are your insights on that? You can just pop off as the spirit moves.
I've heard someone say as the spirit moves you in a while, and I didn't know I kind of needed that in my life.
I think it's fun to scare your friends. I think, like, having just come out of the GM chair for Wildsea, I think that there is something in TTRPG running where you want to, at times, surprise your players. Like, that's, like, surprise and delight. Like, your players are your first audience, your, like, collaborators are your first audience, and one of the most core ways to surprise is with a scare, is with a creepy. Like, one of my favorite things about the Wildsea season is Jay and Abby are the best players at the table to have for shocking horror moments, because they both go and it's great.
We
it's
were like gasping in unison,
delicious
all
candy
the time.
Yeah,
it is great, because as I'm editing those episodes, I know, like, I can see in the waveform, like, what people's audio is doing, and I see Elliot come to the end of a thing, and my eyes immediately at this point glance down to Jay and Abby's tracks, which I have right next to each other, and there's a little pop of sound in each of them, and everyone else is silent. It's like, everyone else is not good audible reactors. Jay and Abby, it's always, oh, and it's always, they're always timed just a little bit off, so I don't have to move them. It's always, oh my god. There's always a great back and forth between the two.
I think it's also, like, fear and, like, humor and, like, laughter are, like, two connected emotions, and that, like, when you're scared, what cuts it is laughter. Like, and I think Brian had this great analogy in the a Talk of a Table episode. I forget which one it was now, but he said, like, if, like, you have such a tense moment in, like, a horror film, and, like, you don't cut it with anything, the audience will just naturally laugh to, like, break that tension. And, like, that is, like, fundamentally why horror and, like, lends itself so well to comedy. And that, like, when you're doing horror, like, there's so much suspense and, like, anticipation that, like, putting a joke in there makes it hit so much harder, because it's, like, less expected. Mm.
There's a reason why, like, Jordan Peele going from comedy to, like, being known now as a horror director makes so much sense. Because ultimately, you're just playing with tension. And it's just that the final release of the tension is either ha or ah. Like, it's so close to one another. It's just how you're, like, framing the narrative around it.
Well, yeah. And that's, is when I'm talking to people about the Panic Table, which is our mothership sci-fi horror actual play, they're like, oh, horror, you must be intense. And, like, yeah, I'm literally wearing a skeleton shirt right now. And I
love the shirt. So, it's...
Thank you. That's what this is actually about today. So,
but you also said Willikers 5 minutes ago, so.
Well, yeah, it's a comedy show is the thing, the Panic Table is, until it's not. Like, they find themselves into these situations that are the only thing. I was like, this is not a horror story. It's a love story that tends to just go kind of terribly awry as you go. But otherwise, you know, it's just sort of a rom-com drama bomb, if you will.
Got his ass.
Oh, wow. Is that the time? Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness.
Elliot, you are a game designer yourself.
Sometimes. Most
and
of the time.
A big old feather in your cap is one of your most exciting new projects, actually. I would love to. Rom-com drama bomb is such a bananas concept about, let me know if I have this right, because I've been practicing pitching it to my parents, who are like, just have a normal job. But
never!
We changed the locks. How did you get in here? You're adopted, which I already knew, but they just like to whip it out.
Great.
You play two people who are absolutely not in love, captured by a nemesis-styled character, be that a supervillain or a supernatural horror or some sort of alien god, and that being has explosives strapped to both of you, and as a three-player game, you have to navigate that being's idea of what a rom-com would be like or die.
Correct. Yeah, okay. I think you nailed it.
Okay, yeah, it's incredible.
It's a love letter to romantic comedies, or rather, a ransom note.
Yes. Which I know that came out of Brian's mouth, Cameron, but that is my copy. I just want to, just before you go.
Is that why I hated it? I can't figure out.
It sounded so right, but it felt so wrong.
That guy's losing his touch. What's happening?
I was talking to your friend and composer, Behold, who does all sorts of wonderful work for your shows, those original scores and tree shanties and things. And he's been Elliot's friend since childhood, and yep, neither of us could place what it is specifically about choosing to make Elliot your nemesis that is so tonic to one's health, to your outlook on life. Like, I could have the worst day possible, but I'm like, at least I'm not Elliot, and that feels good.
Elliot, aren't you glad that we set this up?
What's amazing is that this was in the outline, and I was
words.
Like,
that was your buddies.
Oh, I know. I was like, I saw this in the outline, and I was like, that's a funny bit. He's definitely not going to pull it out on mic. Yeah, Colin.
Off mic bit?
Elliot,
Colin is
know.
One of my oldest friends, and also just an absolute piece of shit.
But back on track, you've written horrifying scenarios, because rom-com drama bomb, that could be horrifying just as much as it could be hilarious, right? But
of course
it's walking that line between those two things. But then you have some just outright stuff. Project Echo is meant to be unnerving all the way through, involving
sure.
time loops and confusing beings and a personal uncertainty in who you are in the greater scheme of things, if I recall.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, speaking of like identity misplacement, there's something wrong with the chickens.
Yes,
which
I would say not a horror
horrifying.
Game. I mean,
no,
it's a horror. Okay.
I've never not played a version of Something's Wrong with the Chickens or Something's Wrong with the Turkeys for the holidays, where there wasn't inherent body horror off the bat, immediate. So yes, they're terrifying games.
No, that's fair. Nothing to add there. You're right.
As a game designer, though, in your opinion, and then I'll throw it to Abby or Chinook or that other one. As Elliot, as a game designer, what, in your opinion, are essential ingredients to having a horrifying fun time at the table?
I think that it's the same thing that makes for good horror broadly. Like, I think that it's scarier not to see the thing. You're like, your imagination is ultimately going to be scarier than whatever you show on screen, like in a movie, for example. And so I feel like when you're designing a game, you are not making the most horrifying thing. You are making the thing that will grow in someone's mind into the most horrifying thing. You give them that little nasty seed that then they fill into this like horrifying, disgusting creature that I could try and write a description of, and I might get 60% of the way there, but I won't get 100% of the way to like what you as a player find the most horrifying with the right prompts and seeds of ideas.
I think that's part of the reason why our podcasts often like start to lilt towards horror, because like there is a tension aspect. There is like if because we're a comedy podcast, ostensibly horror's right there, but also like audio only mediums are rife or like really ripe for horror because explicitly that you can't see the monster, and the thing that you have in your head is always going to be way scarier. And like I can give you the blockbuster $100 million idea of a monster or of a scary moment that we could never do on film because we don't have the budget or the expertise, or quite frankly don't have the space in your imagination to just put on the screen in the way that audio only medium does.
Even if you did, it wouldn't be as frightening, right?
Like, yeah.
I think that's the thing. The two things. One, I actually got the four of you here to pitch the Panic Tables journalism segment on Many-Sided Media. And Brian, can it be called Lilting Towards Horror? Because that...
Yeah, you can have Lilting Towards Horror.
10 out of 10. Unbelievable. But you touched on something. I can't remember if it was talking with Sylviana, our producer. We had Diana Fay, or Diana of the Rose, as she's known, on her different streaming tags and stuff last night, and we were talking about can D&D be scary and inconclusive. Like, you can be a good storyteller. Is D&D mechanically scary? Almost never. Like, you really have to do some jumping jacks was the verdict, kind of right. Loosely yeah. Wandered around before we realized the video wasn't recording and
horror.
What's so powerful about horror games, and this is just magnifying what Elliot said, is like when you're at a table and you just kind of hint at something, you're getting however many players at that table's unique imaginings of what might be around that door or in that sea of trees or, you know, strapped to their chests. And you can't, that's very different when it's in a game versus when it's in a movie, because then each of those may or may not be used in the thing. And Chinook, we had talked briefly about this just in the Discord, and I mean by like 15 minutes before we started this recording, but you pointed out something amazing that I wanted to throw the ball to you too, because you mentioned that like setting stakes is something that's uniquely cool about horror in games. Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah, I think in terms of like games in general, but like especially horror games, stakes are so fucking important. And also it's so, I think in APs and in it's such a interesting place, is it's not the GM setting the stakes. Like, you can try to, but it's the players that will end up telling you what the stakes are more over than not. And that's what's so interesting, because like someone can make something so, make like a stupid, silly, dumb choice and like take that choice and make it like have the most insane highest stakes. And now, like, this person says they're afraid of pencils, and now you have to play a campaign where, like, that's the fear for this one character.
The sharpening.
Right. But it's a unique, like, I think in terms of storytelling, such a unique place for the story, the one that's crafting the story, like, the GM doesn't have the power to create those stakes in a horror setting, which I think is so fascinating and fun. And also, like, lends itself to, like, a comedic lens more often than not, while also, like, maintaining, like, this is still scary and fucked up.
What do we think about that?
I think there's a fun GM trick in there that is very helpful for anyone who stresses over over-planning or who wants to be somewhat of a lazy GM. Your players are going to do the work. They're going to, you just give them a little hint. You don't even have to think through what the thing is going to be. And their imaginations, they're going to, with table talk and doing other things, all of a sudden be like, do you think it's like this or do whatever? They do what I call finagling of, like, you know, you're trying to mystery solve and find the thing. And all of a sudden the GM's like, yes, yes, that seems right.
There's also a great GM like cheat code in there of like, start doing a scene. You get, you know, you're walking down the corridor, you hear something. Hey, Chinook, what is your character most afraid is around the corner?
Yeah.
And then I don't have to do anything. I have got to do nothing.
Yeah.
It's all of a sudden, I put it entirely on the player, entirely on the character, and they're going to all of a sudden make the thing that is scariest to them. They're going to imagine the worst version of that thing, and they've put it exactly where I want it to be, and I've done nothing to earn this.
That's like right. Special guest on Oprah level good. That's how did he do that? Amazing. That's so good. I'm going to steal that immediately. I love that.
Just ask. Just ask him.
Just ask. Be like, what are you afraid of? What do you think is going to be there? What do you think? What is so bad about what could be around the corner? And then it's like,
I love a question to a player that tells you exactly how your player feels. It's just like, why are your palms sweating all of a sudden? Like, you just
this is a fact about your character. I just want to know why.
There is also something that I found that is extremely true, that when you ask a player or anyone in any kind of creative endeavor, like, pick a thing, like what is your character's greatest fear? There's a solid chance that they're going to do something goofy. Like, they're going to say, I'm really scared of pencils. But if you take two additional questions and, like, dig in on it, like, make them commit to that, by the end of it, they will be genuinely scared of pencils. And also, because they created it, because it wasn't just you saying you've got a fear of pencils or the scary monster is a pencil, all of a sudden they've, like, you've given them the opportunity to justify this fear in a way that they can embody and, like, they feel ownership of, and becomes way more real than something if you just put this scary monster in front of them and said, let me describe how it's scary.
Yeah.
I think that that's killer. The one of the reasons I'm obsessed by and chose to go with Mothership RPG for our show is because they codified those instincts that I think you have and use naturally, but that not only are you giving them something to be concerned about, you're giving them the scaffolding as players to then make decisions off of so that it can get to where they want it to be, which is worse. It's so fun, but, like, right, it's fun being scared together. Like, everyone was like, okay, I'm playing a scary game because I want to feel scared. You don't go into 10 Candles or Dread being like, this should be fine. We should just be lilting towards horror in this.
And, exactly.
Yeah. And so the panic engine that they have built into Mothership then makes, like, the things that happen around why you're scared meaningful. So even if you go into it off the cuff, like it's designed to be, where you're like, I don't know, pencils, then it's like, great. Like, you have a recurring nightmare about this. What is it bothers you most? And then lets you sit with that until that instant comes up again, mm-hmm. 2-3 sessions later, and you're like, it's a... It's so satisfying to see those pieces move. I think the one thing that I'm really getting from all the conversations that we're having around Voidstream and the rest of it is that, and yeah, this came up even in the D&D talk, describing the monster is fine. You can be like, oh no, it's a golem made of baby orphans. And everyone's like, ah! It's not pencils, but ah! And, yeah. Eraserhead is right there, and I don't know why I'm jumping for it, but but like that doesn't beat that, like, the room smells like saffron.
Yeah.
You know, or just like, you just pick a sense, go, I love the sweaty palms, knees weak, spaghetti. Yeah.
Senses are huge for horror, I feel like. I feel like going for everything but sight is like a horror cheat code, you know, like a brush against the arm, a smell, a sound, especially with our podcast. Like, I found, especially GMing Wild Sea, like, thinking about Brian's sound design in, like, what can I say that will lead to a really compelling, interesting sound that adds to the experience of, like, a listener for this, which I think is a unique thing for like our podcast that we get to do, is, like, we get to consider that layer of Brian's sound design and, like, what that can bring to horror and a bunch of different genres, like epic fights and everything, but particularly with horror. Like, I think Brian said, like, there's a reason so many of the biggest audio dramas are horror, like, because when you dig in on sound design, you can just create, like, all of a sudden you can put somebody in the biggest space imaginable all alone. Like, there's just things you can do that you can't in any other kind of medium.
I think, what, like Elliot said, like, leaving sight for last, because, like, ultimately, it for in general, like, you're going to describe the thing that you see at the end, and that can be, like, the end of the symphony, but, like, you want to build it up before then. Like, you need that running start to get to the final beat of this is the thing that you experience. And when you see it, when you feel it in all those adjacent ways, like, you just feel it so much stronger.
Yeah, riffing off of that, I see so many players, myself included, where the first time you crack, like, a game that has horror on the label, for instance, you know, you're like, okay, gotta make it scary, and you feel this huge burden to try and bring that into being the second the game starts and to make sure the mood's right on all of the stuff. But throwing the ball to all four of you, and Chinook, you're kind of the king of this on the different shows. As a player, how do you make the situation worse in the most fun way for other people?
That is absolutely your MO.
Because you're incredible.
And this is worse, but fun.
A compliment. It's not like I'm talking to Elliot here. This is
I mean this in the best way possible.
Oh, man. That's a good question. How do you make the...
Because you consistently do this. You're just, it's just great. Yeah.
Thank you. That is a very high compliment. I think it starts, I mean, like, it's good, like, okay, I think it starts with, like, in horror scenarios, establishing, like, the norm of your character first, of, like, what is the, like, zone of comfort for this character? Like, where do they live? So, like, people listening, like, know, like, this is their, like, at, like, this is their baseline, right? And then when you're in, like, scenarios that are, like, heightened or just weird or different, you just play to, like, like if you have done a good job of establishing what the norms of the character are, when they're in scenarios where like it's high stress, you will make choices that are high stress but real to your character. And so it just makes it easy to be like, oh yeah, of course my character's gonna like start crying and try to like hide their gun behind a couch because they're sad and scared, which like to me is like the normal thing to do, but like in reality, like why the fuck are you doing that? This is not helping at all.
What's behind your couch?
I don't know. There's no guns behind my couch. There's just a plant. It's normal.
I swear.
I'm a regular guy.
I'm holding it for a friend.
It's not my gun. It's really not my gun.
Blue team, move in.
We got him.
Boom.
Man, great sting operation.
Playing like, with Brian and Elliot and like Abby as like my GMs and Carolyn Page. It's a lot of trust in that, like, I know they'll punish me for making these choices and they'll hold me to it. So I can, like, make these swings knowing that, like, my GM will, like, honor those, like, stakes that I will create. Like, it's never just gonna be, like, tossed away. It's always gonna be something that, like, okay, cool, you did that, and now it's gonna fuck shit up, and that's on you, dude. It's always, like, a symbiotic, like, relationship in that way.
Yeah, it's never, like, punitive in the way that, like, you did something bad or unoptimized or something, and it's like, okay, now I'm going to give you your just desserts, whatever. But it is right. Like, oh, you made this choice that you're going to lean into this. Great. Now you've given me like permission to go like push you further down that road. And now we can get, I mean, like, you know, as we were saying with like tension and tension for horror and comedy, it's just about like heightening the tension until you break it. It's about giving more contrast between the lights and the darks, in the same way that like anything, fashion, design is about contrast. The further you can get from the norm and then smash those two things together, the bigger the reaction will be, whether that is mm-hmm. laughter, whether that is terror, whether that is any other kind of emotion. And the more your players give you that rope to go further and further down the uncharted passage, the more you can kind of show them down there, which is always really fun when you have players who are like down to make the bad choice, knowing that it's more interesting in the end.
Abby, why do you think it is that IRL, when you are not at the table, when someone's like, you want to go see Hereditary, your knee-jerk response is absolutely not. But the second
not even a little bit.
You've got some dice in hand or some prompt cards, it's just no holds barred and you're all over it. What can you talk about that?
I've been trying to figure this out because, yes, I'm the biggest wimp in the entire world when it comes to scary movies, scary TV, like will not do it. And also, like everything is scary to me.
I really want you to expand what you consider to be scary movie or television to include.
No, yeah. Well, it's hilarious that you're talking about pencils because I have a story, which is in high school, I took French. And we would watch French films sometimes in class in an effort to like try to, you know, get used to hearing the language. And we watched part of a movie called, I think it was just called Nikita, but at some point...
Oh, La Femme Nikita.
No.
Oh, different one.
I think it's a different... Anyway, Nikita, La Femme, I don't
know. No, Brian. No.
Brian, you absolute fool.
Sorry. But she's like a sleeper agent or whatever. She's a troubled young woman who then gets arrested and then they turn her into like a crazy agent. But when they are, they've first arrested her and they're talking to her and they're trying to get her to like tell them her name, all these sorts of things, whatever. The guy, the cop, puts a pencil on the table with a piece of paper, and she picks up the pencil and she promptly stabs him straight in the hand. And I was not expecting this, and it freaked me out so much. I started to have a panic attack in French class. And what do you think was the class that I had exactly after that?
Pencils?
Art.
Pencils.
pencil class.
Pencil 101.
I had to go to pencils 101. I was actually in pencils 201, but thank you.
But not after that experience. She got pushed back to 101.
And so, yeah, I get spooked by everything. Brian has a great story about why. Watching,
I feel bad about this. So we were watching, the second in Edgar Wright's Cornetto trilogy, Hot Fuzz.
And Hot Fuzz, not a scary movie.
Not a scary movie.
No one would define it as horror.
But it has some moments of like tension and like strong reveals. There's some jump scares. And midway through, Abby's having a tough time, but is enjoying herself. It's a very funny, fun movie. And she turns to me and she's like, maybe like two thirds of the way through, and she's like, I gotta know, are there any more scary parts coming up? Can you just tell me what they are, and then I'll be able to enjoy the movie more? I like kind of tracked the movie ahead in my, I hadn't seen it in a while, but I tracked it through my head, and I was like, no, there's a couple of like things, but I'll kind of tap you before they happen. And I swear to God, not 30 seconds later, she breathed a sigh of relief, and then it's the scene when Simon Pegg walks into his room and like the weird guy is in there, and it's like the biggest jump scare of the movie. I swear to God, Abby jumps 2 feet off the couch, screamed, and ran out of the room. It was because I'd accidentally lulled her into an absolute sense of ease and comfort next to someone she trusted and loved, who accidentally set her up for an absolute failure.
So this is the baseline we're talking about, is that I'm the biggest wimp on earth when it comes to this stuff. And yet, I freaking love a horror TTRPG. And again, it's the thing where I was saying before of like, at summer camp, I absolutely loved doing like horror stories around a campfire. Like there's something different, I guess, about like people sitting around sharing this in person or, you know, over Zoom or whatever, but people talking to one another and the human connection of it that I think, I don't know if it diffuses it or if it just is more interesting to me to like watch people I know express these things and talk about what scares them or whatnot. I cannot pinpoint what makes the difference, but there is something really distinct about like TTRPGs and story building together that just is different. Just hits different.
It just hits different.
Do you think
different.
It's agency?
There is a thing, Abby, that I think you are more so than horror are particularly adept at tragedy.
Thank you.
An outcome of horror. Yeah.
it's adjacent. Yeah. It's like it's horror, but you don't get the break of a jump scare of like the ending of both our main My First Dungeon 10 Candles and actually our Patreon 10 Candles game.
10 Candles, it's great.
Is there another option in 10 Candles besides tragedy?
It is a tragic horror role playing game.
It's really just baked into the whole thing. Yeah.
It's explicitly tragic, but I feel like there is none of us achieved tragedy in quite the way that either of your characters
especially
did.
The second one. Also, you took a real horror turn in the second one, like with your characters.
I think I'm just getting more comfortable with it and leaning into it.
Oh, you should listen. You should join our Patreon. It's called the Dice Pool. For $10 a month, you get bonus actual plays every month. Splash. Abby, I'm wondering if like it's maybe agency makes you feel better in horror. Like I feel like for me, because I'm similar to you, where like I really get fucked up by horror movies. Mm-hmm. But if I have some degree of control or action or agency, it's like all of a sudden it has like a lot less power, even though I'll get more fucked up than a movie character. I think it's just like the movie is like you're on the train and you can't hit the brakes, and
it's
in a game
you
can hit the brakes
instead of with you. Yeah, actually
I think there's
what?
A
that
safety
clicks.
In that of like, yeah. Like you could always just be like, I'm gonna get up from this table, and like, yeah, you could turn a movie off. It's just like, I don't know, there's something different there.
You read my mind, which is terrifying and upsetting because
I'm in your walls
because it means that two of you have a connection
because you're in here now. But
I'm just not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Exactly. You took it. Even that.
Rom-Com Drama Bomb is a three-player, GM-less, asymmetrical TTRPG about meet-cutes and mayhem.
In this 90-minute timed game, you'll play as two people who shouldn't fall in love and the evil villain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do. Rom-Com Drama Bomb is now available. You can grab it digitally at moreblueberries.itch.io/romcom, or you can grab a physical book, the pinkest book you've ever seen, at moreblueberries.shop/romcom. Check it out and happy rom-comming. Rom-comming? I don't know. Drama bombing?
Speak into the void. You never know who may be listening. In the Annie Award-winning Void 1680 AM, you take on the role of a late-night radio DJ. Use a standard poker deck and a six-sided die to build your playlist, interact with callers, and assemble a show that expresses something about why you love the music that you do. Void 1680 AM includes rules for single session and ongoing play, so you can develop the relationships of your DJ with your callers over time. You can even join the growing community of affiliate DJs whose shows are broadcast live on air and on YouTube. Shop Void 1680 AM now at bannerless.games/shop and take 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON. Again, that's 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON.
It feels like you and Chinook are saying like the same, the two sides of the same coin, but truly in that, like, the agency means that, what was the word you used? Symbiosis, Chinook? I loved that. That, like,
symbiotic.
Yeah, yeah. That like you are a participant in the event. And so, and then in Abby's words, you have the opportunity to do something about the awful. And the path Chinook usually takes is to make that awful worse. And that is which builds the thing that we all want to see and be a part of but haven't been able to experience yet. And you're not strapped to a chair hoping that it shakes out the way that the author intends, because you're part of that authorship. And that I'm reminded of, there's this amazing story, and I'm gonna butcher it. It's Joe Hill's work, and I think it's either called like Best Short Horror or like Best in Horror. And the whole it's about a guy who does literary criticism of horror stories, and he's tired of his job, and he's tired of the weirdos that like submit to his lit magazine. And he's, it like starts at like some like sad sack horror con where everybody's got just gingivitis and extraneous hair, and the hotels are gross. And so his life, he comes back to just a really disgusting package on his doorstep that turns out to contain a manuscript. And the manuscript is the single most refreshing, most horrifying, most avant-garde, terrifying thing he's ever read. And so he waxes poetic about this, tries to track down the author, because he's like, for the first time in like a decade, I'm excited to publish something again. And so it gets weirder and Lynchian as he tries to find the author. And then the book one of my favorite tools that I don't see, and every time I'm like, oh, I'm definitely going to do that in my next game, and never do, is people telling scary stories during a scary story. So someone will stop the action to tell a story that's just ominous. There's no, you know, like you stop the sheriff chasing the bad guy up the mountain to turn to his posse and tell the story about one time this guy he met in a cave, and then it's just deeply unsettling. And then you go right back to it, and it has this foul omen that carries over. So he describes a little bit of this story, which is horrific. It involves like sewing buttons in places of eyes. It's awful. But at the end of the book, 1000% a spoiler alert, he finds the guy's house, and he arrives, and it is full on Texas Chainsaw. Like, the cell reception drops. It's on a mountain in the middle of Pennsylvania somewhere. His car breaks down, and he goes inside. It reeks of carrion. There's somebody like strapped to a bed upstairs, and something clicks, and our hero goes, finally. And as he hears the chainsaw rev up downstairs, he sprints into the woods, and the narrator's like, and for the first time in his life, he knew who he was and what he was supposed to do. And he like takes off running down the hill. And it's just like, yes! Because that's what you show up for a spooky game for, is to be that. And you have the safety of not having to die horribly in the end. Just go, man, that was crazy, wasn't it? That's,
wow, that's meaty.
That is wild. I was going to say, there's definitely... I think a joy in being able to be a participant in the horror story, even if, like, I feel like a lot of times the natural inclination for someone who's scared of it would be to try to fix it or abate it. And it's like, no, there's actually a lot of fun as well of just leaning into it, of like, yes,
lilting towards it.
Lilting towards horror, if you will. And yeah, like building on it and being like, this is all horrifying, gonna have nightmares later, but at least I helped make it.
What pop culture touch points for you as we're cooking up this Void Stream thing? We really aim solidly at the like 80s to 90s lo-fi analog horror. To you, what lives just rent free in your brain anytime you're like, oh, spooky scenario, here's my go-to?
I'm a huge stan and will recommend to everyone the podcast Malevolent from Harlan Guthrie.
Yeah.
I think great. That is like just the best, some of the best, if not the best, horror storytelling that I've had the chance to consume. In terms of eldritch horror specifically, I think that he gets it so right.
I feel like I never have any good like horror touchstones. I just have like suspense touchstones.
It is,
which I feel like ends up being the same thing. But the one that jumped to my mind is the sci-fi movie Primer. Which is a great movie. It turns out the director's a huge asshole. but movie is very good. And it accomplishes something of just being like very, very tense the whole way through in a way that is scary. Because also like everything kind of happens just off screen in a way that is terrifying and frustrating, but that makes you lean in that little bit closer and try to figure out what's happening. Oh, wait, I do have actually a good... I just realized what it was. I'm a big fan of BBC, like, sci-fi and dramas, and one of the best sci-fi things that the BBC ever came out with was called The Prisoner. Came out in, like, the late 1960s or something.
It's so good.
It's so good, and it's... There's so much weird stuff to it. The ending was like so controversial that like fans were threatening to kill Patrick McGowan, who wrote it. But it's just incredibly weird and unsettling and cerebral. It's like mystery, it's suspense, it's spy thriller, it's horror, it's psychedelic. It just does so much at a time in history where you wouldn't think people were innovating that much, and they absolutely fucking were. Also, the soundtrack is all like da 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 da.
It's like this, too happy.
It's like ragtime, big band, like yeah, like ragtime, and it makes it all the fucking scarier. Because you're like, they can't be this sunny and bright when bad things are happening.
That's my favorite kind of horror, is like when it's sunny and bright, and then they really fuck you up despite it.
Midsommar.
I think in terms of like found footage horror, I mean, there's like the classics of like Blair Witch Project, and like fucking Paranormal Activity. But I think a hot take is like What We Do in the Shadows, the movie, calling that horror.
I love that movie
like
so much. Footage.
It's so good comedically, and like does have like some moments where like you're kind of afraid, like at like the vampire ball and stuff, and like people are straight up dying in that film. But like it's so baked into the comedy that it kind of is. Loses its sting in that way, but like very fucking good comedically.
I absolutely hate the movie The Truman Show because it fucked me up so much. It is my greatest nightmare to imagine that just the whole world around me has, like, I've been living in the Matrix. For some reason, the Matrix didn't fuck me up as much. Maybe because he, like, escapes it and then screws up everything.
Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
There's more power. Yeah.
But it makes me think as well about my dad always told me a story of when he was a kid, he read Dracula. And at some point was like sitting in an armchair late at night reading it and got so freaked out that he got up and sat behind the armchair. Because he was like, then nothing could be behind me because it's just the wall. And I think it's the same thing of it's like
it's how they get you.
That unknown of like, I don't know what to trust around me and like what is happening, and the bizarre loneliness and terror of not knowing what around you is like real and what isn't, and how to deal with that in your own brain is fascinating to me, and also, as I said, my worst nightmare.
I remember rereading Dracula, and one, it's the whole thing's found footage. It's yeah. journals, it's news periodicals. One is a transcript of a wax cylinder tube. It's wild that nobody's made a movie of the book.
The way it's written, yeah.
As found
like,
footage.
As a more yeah. direct reference, yeah.
Yeah, it's It'd always like Keanu going, whoa. But, pew, pew, pew. Yeah, but I love Dracula. And yeah, Frankenstein also framed as like found anecdotal evidence. It's like a ship's log and then a diary. It's really exciting. This isn't found footage, so I think Chinook, so far, one, this has been a game and you've been winning. Thank you for following the prompts.
I love well winning. Done.
Yeah, that's how you play.
You have all
baby.
The points.
But It Follows is
Ooh. Oh, I still haven't seen oh, It Follows. Behold, God. Speaking of Behold, keeps repeatedly for the last like, 5 years keeps telling me to watch it for the score. It's like when we were working score. On Disaster Project piece. Echo, he was like, the score for It Follows is like the biggest Behold inspiration. I'm like,
My Hail Mary is by the end of this Backerkit campaign, we're actually going to get him and Disaster Piece in a room and just chat about this stuff.
Yes.
And he's one of my favorite composers, oh, just hands so down. Thrilled. Yeah, we were talking about Colin it this morning. Colin was that. Like, let's get his ass. And I was like, let's do it.
I'm like, how do I help? How do I make this happen? Yeah. I want yeah. this.
But the genius in that show, I love it, is that, so it's about a sexually transmitted ghost, which don't think about it. But two, the rules are it can look like anybody. It can't run. And only you can see it. So most of the movie is just wide shots of the characters or claustrophobically close ones. But either way, intentionally, the frames are empty, are desolate. And anytime you see a person, you're just like, ah! Yeah. And it could be nothing.
It's happening.
It could be. It's like the scariest scene in the movie. Nothing happened. There are lots and lots of scary scenes in the movies. There's this one where they're just in a playground at night because they've been running from the thing, and they're just looking at the trees, and it's awful. It's and nothing's happening. It's perfectly using the medium. So I get really excited when I see and think, I have a surprise question. It's not a surprise. This is not a surprise. But like using the medium excellently, one thing I wanted to talk about, I guess I'll throw the ball to Brian specifically, and then we can open it up to the group. Sound, music, and its relationship to storytelling in general, but specifically to horror. When is it great to include it? When is it even better to not include it?
The more I've been doing sound design, the more I appreciate silence. In that, like, when you think about music, there's a reason that arrest is noted in music. Like, again, like, just with everything we've been talking about, like, the difference between silence and cacophony, like, that contrast does so much. The difference between putting two contrasting colors together in fashion or in painting. Like, when you have sound and you're trying to elicit an emotion, it is often about giving that contrast or giving that surprise in the same way that elicits a laugh, in the same way that elicits a scream. It's building up to something, letting your mind anticipate where it's going to go, and then breaking that anticipation. Whether it's like, you know, for some things it might be like you've got two notes of a chord and you don't complete the chord in a way that like anyone's brain, like you might not necessarily know what that means musically, but if you hear it, your brain will instinctively be like, that is wrong, fix it. And that's when you're able to resolve that chord. All of a sudden it's, ah, it's thank you, finally. And the same thing can happen in a suspense or a horror scene. Like you hear something in the background, it slowly builds and it builds and it builds. And then you get, you know, Elliot in the GM seat saying like, and then, and I can just choose to take what we already have, which is the GM's speech. I can take the player's reactions to it and just use sound to heighten those things of you. Because when you're playing a game, you have those emotions and those feelings and like that internal soundtrack that just doesn't exist when you're listening to it back in the recording. So all I'm trying to do is put into a recording and onto the page of like the music, the thing that was already there for the players. And a lot of that is that rising suspense and suspense and suspense, and then Elliot says the thing and bang. And it's all in those moments of silence and that contrast that mean absolutely everything.
Do we buy that?
Nah.
I will say, especially.
I just wanted more time on the mic, guys. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, especially with Wild C, Elliot is particularly good at delivering lines in a very suspenseful and like pausing in just the right places, and sometimes particularly being like quiet with it, but in a way where you're like, but why? Yeah, what do you mean? What do you mean? So you are particularly adept as well in your delivery of various things, playing with silence in that same way.
Thanks. And these are all like things that can be noted musically, like the difference between a note and a rest, the difference between a crescendo and a decrescendo, like changing the volume. Also, like having an accidental note in music is like the one thing that sounds a little out of place, but because it's not there, or because it is there and it sounds a little out of place, you notice it more. Like it's all the same thing, man. Hey,
it's
guys,
all the same
it's
thing,
all the same
man.
Thing. All right?
Everything's the same, man.
Everything
we're all one.
Is music, all right. Everything exists in the universal language of music. Okay.
Brad, yes. This is Brian's new favorite thing with the glasses.
Fine vintage.
Fully switched characters at this point.
That's your talk of the table phase, I imagine. Just as in
it is. He's doing it the whole time, and our guests hate it, but he won't stop.
He doesn't even
but
need
he gets
glasses.
Really good stuff. They find it just threatening enough that they give us good answers.
It's also what you're talking about, Brian, is not to spoil, it's kind of the theme of the season of Wild Sea. For those who are following along.
No spoilers.
Between
no
spoilers. Howl and void, cacophony and silence. Mm-hmm.
Can you guys hear like a tuba in the background of mine?
I was really trying to like get situated into that silence like a soapy ominous bath, but then in the background there's like
there's some asshole that plays the tuba like every evening in my fucking apartment.
Oh, that's so good.
No, they're so bad. And like
if that tuba hadn't happened,
like,
we might
like,
have
what
done
the,
that
who the
for...
fuck is doing that?
They're learning.
Well, and it's impressive because a tuba's a hard thing to hide, right? Like it's not. Oh, quick, hurry! I gotta just.
It's also not an instrument that I imagine a lot of people in adulthood are like. I want to learn an instrument. You know what I'm gonna start with?
Yeah, you kind of need a band for a tuba.
The tuba.
Yeah,
that's what you think. Not this guy. Not this guy.
By himself.
Just I mean, lots of tuba and lots of loud sex. That's all we hear coming from this apartment.
At the same time, sometimes?
That's New York, baby!
Chinook, any thoughts to add to the sounds of silence?
I was going to say hello, darkest my old friend. Very good. I mean, I think what Brian also masterfully does in... like designing like our show is not only like using silence, but also like using like table talk as like a element of sound design of like, mm-hmm. there'll be like such a big tension building moment. And then he'll cut it with like Jay saying something. Oh, actually I forgot this thing. And I'll like give you humor in like a place that wasn't really a joke, but like in the way he designs it, like hits hard. Cause like of all the elements of sound, he just used to build up tension. And I think that's a really fun thing to just see in post and like having like being part of the production, be like, oh shit, like Brian made this even better with the editing.
Oh,
but
Brian.
Like using table talk as a sound. Yeah. Is
you
also,
did it.
You did, that's a great point.
Hey, listen, a voice is just another instrument. Am I right? It's my symphony. Okay?
A voice is basically another tuba.
It's just another tuba.
I think though, like to lean into the medium as well, and this is Chinook, you made me think of this because I think this is something you did a lot in 10 Candles, especially is. You change your voice volume really effectively and your mic positioning, and that's like very useful of the medium for like for guiding the listener's emotion. I think Brian put it this way once, where like you get quiet and we all have to lean in, even though we don't, but we do. And like I remember your voicemail in 10 Candles, you were like down here just like talking very slowly, and it's great. And just like just to shout out another way that like the medium can be used for horror is like how you play the instrument of the microphone.
How you play the instrument of the tuba, if you will.
Yeah.
This turned out to be so, I think, practically productive for running spooky games. I didn't know what to expect. Not that I didn't think you would like have great things to say on this subject. But, you know, I mean, horror is such a broad thing that you can kind of dance around stuff for a long time. And I think we walked away from a lot of this discussion with really key insights. We're making a thing. We've made Voidstream. I showed you the video. Real talk, I don't know. What do you think? Is it cool? Would use?
I think the more I play games, the more I play tabletop stuff, the more I like leaning into like random tables or like bits of things that are ephemera that can be used to like inspire things. And that's what I'm interested in about this project, in that it is like take something, use the inspiration from it, and like allow that vibe to like infuse your table in a way that like it, kind of in the same way that we use sound design of like we're trying to heighten for the listener what was at the table. And it's the same way for like your home table. If you're using something, it's like you're trying to heighten the experience at the table to something that you maybe can't achieve on your own. Like having a tool like that, I think is incredibly fun. And like just opens you up to a lot of creative opportunities.
I think that like one of the things that you're doing is, and I know like Mothership is obviously this thing that you've grown really in depth with. And like you've obviously had a lot of time with to explore. And I think what you said about the way that Mothership gives these tools to invoke some of these horror techniques of performance, you're creating the audiovisual equivalent of those tools in a lot of ways, like because of how much experience you've had playing with the text version of them. It's like, how can we make this like a diegetic sort of audiovisual thing? And so I think it's like a really, really great resource for people, because then you're giving them that, you're not spoon feeding them the imagined horror, but you're giving them again like that seed I was talking about earlier. But you're just giving like you're giving like a really fucking good, like a meaty seed to put in their brain. Like nice, I think that's what you're doing by adding audio visual, is you're making like these really, really juicy horror seeds.
It is also in the same way that we were talking, like using all five senses. It's like, hey, let me use this tool to help invoke some of those that can do it in a way that's more effective than I can just do with my, you know, human voice.
Elliot, what you were just saying reminded me so strongly. Y'all remember Signs, the Shyamalan one?
Yeah.
The best part of that, it has a lot of really memorable moments, but to me, it's when they're all in the closet with the tinfoil hats on watching the news recording, and at one point Joaquin Phoenix is like, "Vamanos, children," because it's going on in Peru, but they're in a cornfield or something, and it's just shaky found footage, and it goes on for like 10 minutes where nothing happens. You're just like, what is this, some sort of quinceañera? What's happening? And then for half a second, you just see like an arm stick out from behind like a fence or something. And that's it. Like you don't get to see the monster. It's just like the slightest confirmation of belief. And you go, go! And that stays with you in a way that, again, if we were in the business of trying to make like big monstery spacey ghosts, I don't think it would be satisfying. It's the implication that something's gone terribly awry. And then leaving it at that, because then you start doing the work from there as players, right?
No, I think that's what excites me most about this project is like you get to not just like play like with like what you commonly get to play with in these types of shows, but you also get to play with the piece of not knowing and like the audience giving you that grace of like, it's okay if I don't know. You get to like take out portions of story and be like, you're not going to know what this is until like I tell you it's okay. And I think that's such an incredible like tool to have for storytelling, and I'm so excited to see what you do with it. But just in this medium, I'm like, this is such a cool piece of storytelling application to just play with for this medium. So I'm very excited to see.
Thank thanks so much for joining us. If you happen to be visiting New York City and enjoy either being horrified at how little you're laughing or afraid of how much you're enjoying yourself, check out the stand-up comedy scene, because you're probably going to see Chanuk doing his thing up there on the stage, risking it all for guts and glory and mostly just belly laughs. Is that the best way to...
Yeah, that works. That's what I do. That's what I do to you.
Check out the thrilling new Kickstarter campaign that's from Many Sided Media, a Regency era improv comedy extravaganza, beautifully dubbed Bitcherton, a podcast and love letter to Austinian nonsense aplenty that's chock full of dropout.tv comedians and alums, special guests, and also Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really how we're doing it.
Do please investigate back them and then us and enjoy the beautifully crafted video that accompanies their podcast campaign announcement.
Who made that?
Who did it? Were they bald?
Who could have done that?
Were they bald? They sound bald.
Their work just sort of evokes a sense of baldness that I can't put my finger on.
Yeah, and by the time this reaches the airwaves, I think it'll be still time to catch the latest season of My First Dungeon, where the very people in this conversation are sailing the leafy shoals of the Wild Sea, an arboreal adventure of nautical warfare, practical pranks, and unexpectedly beautiful tree shanties. Anyway, I'm loving it. It's bananas, equal parts spooky and seafaring. I don't know. Check it out. Any last thoughts?
Rom-com Drama Bomb comes out July 15th.
Right.
Woo!
And after you're done backing Bitcherton on Kickstarter, after you're done catching up on all the scenes of My First Dungeon and the Wild Sea, after you've listened to every episode of Talk of the Table, maybe you should head over to the Panic Table, listen to the first season of Unaccompanied Minors.
Maybe.
That's a pretty fun thing to do.
If you've got the time.
Again, you got to do all the other stuff.
You have to have a lot of time on your hands for that to be worth it.
You've got a spare 20 minutes. It's a great way to pass the time.
If you haven't completely run out of money by the time you've backed Bitcherton, Voidstream, and then just donated to our various shows, you should absolutely endorse the skills of one Elliot Davis as he cranks out what is a surefire three-person party hit in his tabletop RPG rom-com drama.
If you only got two friends, it's going to be a great time.
Well, I am curious, and this could be off mic or not, but like, in order to make a show, in order to make a game like this, wouldn't you have to have the experience of knowing like what having friends is like, Elliot?
Yeah, you would. Which is why I'm proud to announce the team of consultants I had to hire to pretend to be my friends during the production of this, including many people on this call, Shenouk Tissera, Abby Hepworth, Brian Flaherty, all getting paid at a premium.
Very good rate.
Ooh, there's a good alternate villain for rom-com in there somewhere of like the hired...
The hired friend.
Bridesmaid for hire.
Yeah. Bridesmaid for hire. There's something around there. I don't know what it is.
But... It's like the Uno reverse of villains. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'll go ahead and hit. You know, the second I press stop on this, we're going to say something incredible, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Rom-com Drama Bomb is a three-player, GM-less, asymmetrical TTRPG about meet-cutes and mayhem. In this 90-minute timed game, you'll play as two people who shouldn't fall in love and the evil villain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do. Rom-com Drama Bomb is now available. You can grab it digitally at moreblueberries.itch.io/romcom. Or you can grab a physical book, the pinkest book you've ever seen, at moreblueberries.shop/romcom. Check it out and happy rom-comming. Rom-comming? I don't know. Drama bombing?
Speak into the void. You never know who may be listening. In the Annie Award-winning Void 1680 AM, you take on the role of a late-night radio DJ. Use a standard poker deck and a six-sided die to build your playlist interact with callers, and assemble a show that expresses something about why you love the music that you do. Void 1680 AM includes rules for single session and ongoing play, so you can develop the relationships of your DJ with your callers over time. You can even join the growing community of affiliate DJs whose shows are broadcast live on air and on YouTube. Shop Void 1680 AM now at bannerless.games/shop and take 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON. Again, that's 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON.